Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Roleplay Chat. It's me, Matt, a game master who just can't stop talking about role-playing games. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about improvising our games, whether that be a game completely improvised with zero preparation, or an ongoing game with some preparation, but other elements of the game are improvised. And let's be honest, all games are like this. Even the ones where we prepare a lot of elements of the game, our players always throw a curveball at us. So today's conversation is going to be useful, I think, in all contexts. We're going to cover things like how the rules of traditional improvisation apply to role-playing games, how we can use improv to help propel stories forward, the differences between running one-shot games that are improvised and ongoing games that are improvised, and also just going over general tools, tricks, and strategies. Before I get into that, though, I wanted to remind everybody all of the usual housekeeping stuff. As always, I wanted to remind folks that there's lots of ways for you to support the Roleplay Chat podcast. You can do so for free by spreading the word of the show with your fellow players, game masters, or with your gaming table. Or you can support the show monetarily by using the affiliate links in the description of the show. So you can check down there. There's a couple of links to Hero Forge, DriveThruRPG, and 1985 games for dice, minis, and everything in between. Without further ado, though, let's get right into the conversation. Can't wait for you guys to listen to this one. It's a really solid one. Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to another episode of Roleplay Chat. I'm Matt, and I'm a game master who cannot stop talking about role-playing games. Today, I'm joined by the original shitty tabletop RPG ideas guy. He is an author and writer, as you may also know him for his role on the Etherlog, a 5th edition actual play series, or as the game master for Spontaneum, a weekly completely improvised 5th edition game on Twitch. Welcome, Sam Comerford, to Roleplay Chat. Hello.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Sam, it's been a long time coming. A lot of folks in the space keep telling me how amazing you are, and now I can see why. Obviously, your content speaks for itself, but speaking to you is nice, too.
I certainly hope it doesn't, but, you know, maybe in a good way.
Awesome, Matt. Well, yeah, thanks for being here. I'm real excited to talk to you today about improvised games. But before we do that, I do want the listeners to get to know you a little bit better. So why don't you take this time to let them know about you, your projects, and your Game Master origin story?
Yeah. So, hi, as was previously mentioned, my name is Sam Comerford. In terms of who I am, I'm a little goblin man. I'm still in college. I'm still figuring that stuff all out. But, you know, in the little free time that I have, I like to run games of Dungeons and Dragons and whatnot and make these shitty ideas and put them on Twitter. Yeah, in terms of projects that I have going on, I ran a Kickstarter about a year ago, and we're finally getting the physical copies out for that, so that's very exciting.
Nice, that's cool.
Oh, yeah, it's been a struggle, to say the least. Additionally, projects. I run the Etherlog, as was previously mentioned. You can check that out wherever podcasts are available, and I run Spontaneum on Twitch, Tuesdays at 8, Eastern, that is. In the PM, not the AM. I would never be up that early.
I feel like there's an untapped market there. 7 a.m. Eastern time games. Someone out there, make it happen.
Like Breakfast Club or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of my GM origin story, I got introduced to TTRPGs through Fiasco, actually, originally.
Oh, so good.
Realize it was a tabletop role-playing game. I just sort of played it with my family, and they're like, yes, this is cool. And then my uncle invited me to his home 5e game with his family, and I was like, yeah, that's great. So I meet up this character, this super edgy drow warlock to this like death patron or something like that. And then it was a Roxfall party dies situation because someone decided to take the gem out of the cursed statue. And I've been playing ever since.
Awesome. Awesome.
So yeah, that's essentially it.
That's so cool. So cool. Well, I'm happy for you that your Kickstarter, your journey is near its completion.
Oh my God.
Can you remind me what that project is, and are people able to still purchase it somewhere?
Yes. So the project is called the Shitty Not Compendium. It's a big sort of handbook of like
that so much.
300 ish different shitty ideas. And it's available on DriveThruRPG if you feel so inclined. And then physical copies, I'm getting proof of those. So whenever we get those ready, you can get them physically if you want to. So yeah, that's essentially the gist of it.
Yeah, that's real exciting. Real exciting. And you know what, Sam, it's funny that you say that you started with Fiasco, because I think most of us that like roleplay in role-playing games, if they haven't tried Fiasco, they definitely should.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, but I feel like having that as your foundation into role-playing games, that's really cool. Like it introduces you to that element of relationship building and, you know, very little die rolls, and just it's effectively an improv game.
Oh,
is
yeah.
What it is.
Yeah, yeah, especially because of the fact that it's not about your character winning necessarily. Like losing the game is very much a part of the entire experience of Fiasco. And that is something I think that can be easily ported into any tabletop game. Where, I mean, you might get angry if you roll low, and I mean, I don't blame you. It can be really frustrating if you keep rolling fives, but you could really branch off of failure, and typically you could do a lot more with failure than you can with success. And improv.
Yeah, it takes a muscle though, right? Like it's a muscle you got to practice using.
Oh my God.
And
yes.
Yeah, but you're 100% right. I couldn't agree more. So I love that. And I think that must have influenced the way that you play games now, right? Has it had an impact at all?
100%. I think, especially because I'm typically a forever DM, except when I'm on a Homie and the Dudes show, which is great. They're great people. Typically I just run games, and really, it's not for when you're DMing. It's not about winning. You don't win. You only win if the party wins. You know. And having that non-antagonistic sort of viewpoint on it, and creating that these monsters or even NPCs that you're setting up to perhaps inevitably fail is a part of the job description. And I think that Fiasco really provided a foundation in failure for that. And I think that, I mean, obviously the game's called Fiasco, for Christ's sake. I mean, it's pretty indicative of what you're gonna find in there.
Yeah, exactly.
But failure is such an important cornerstone of tabletop games, especially if you branch off further than just death. You know, death is the most boring way to fail, you know, because if you die, you can't come back from that. However, if you get like your soul stolen or something like that, or you lose a family member, there's so much that can be done with that, and sort of embracing what comes after failure is something I really had to learn as I grew in this space.
Yeah, I like that a lot, and I'd encourage people listening to go check out a conversation I had late in the year last year with Sean and Shannon from Paradise. We talked about, and this was something that a lot of people got pretty mad about, actually, to no surprise, the internet, when you put an opinion out there. But the idea was that player characters shouldn't die until their character or their player is ready for them to die.
Sean and Shannon are both great. I've had the fortune to have them both on Spontaneum. And honestly, I don't disagree with that. I think at the end of the day, and this is also going to be a controversial statement, at the end of the day, at least the way I view it, you can play role-playing games however the hell you want. It's your
game. Absolutely.
But to me, a role-playing game, especially like Dungeons and Dragons, or really any of them, even like Delta Green or Ten Candles, where your character is gonna die, it's to serve a story. you know? And honestly, there are times when I do debate, like, is this satisfying? You know? Because I'm really at heart, I'm an author, I'm a writer. And I love story arcs, I love plot. And when something doesn't wrap up nicely, sometimes it's okay. Sometimes an open-ended thing is fine. But sometimes it can be really frustrating. But I think the caveat to that is that when a character does die, it can suck.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do so much with that for your next character. Like maybe they're on a path of vengeance for your old character. Or maybe it motivates your party to do something about that. Like it doesn't have to end with death. And I think that a lot of people don't think about the legacy that your character leaves behind, even if it's immediate, you know?
That's a really good point, Sam. I think that transitions us well into talking about improvised games, because, you know, before recording this, I went and brushed up on my rules of improv, and I'd like to pick your brain about how you think those translate to tabletop RPGs. Maybe we'll get to that later. But one of those rules is to not block action, not to say no. And I think, you know, a character death in some fashion can be viewed as that no. It has this finality to it. But anyway, yeah, let's move into improvised games. I think that I'll do a, maybe it's a harsh transition, but I want to get right into this. So improvised games, you do a lot of them on Spontaneum. Effectively, that is what Spontaneum is.
It's a glorified game show. It's a bastardization of everything tabletop stands for.
Let's get into it. I want to define our terms for the listeners and for us to make sure that we kind of, you know, we're talking about the same thing. But when I say an improvised game, what does that mean to you, Sam? What comes to mind?
So typically when I think of improvised games, I mean, some people call it pantsing it, where you're flying by the seat of your pants. And really what that entails is there is going to be improv wherever you're at with tabletop gaming, that you can't avoid it. If you want to have no improv in your games, write an audio drama. But if you're playing a tabletop game, there's inherently improvisational aspects to it. And just really dialing it up to 100, you could just add more to it. Like for Spontaneum, I just have a list of settings. I don't prep anything before the games, nothing at all. I don't even know. Here's an industry secret. If you watch Spontaneum and people will bring these characters of different levels and whatnot, I never read their character sheets. On principle, I never read their character sheets because I love it when they surprise me, like, oh, I can do this. And I'm like, you can? What? Because that adds to it. They're like, actually, I'm immune to psychic damage. And I'm like, oh, so you are. All right. Well, I suppose this monster can't really hurt you then. And I mean, for improv, you're not really going for satisfying as much as you are going for fun, you know?
Absolutely.
Or at least for me. Because I run a comedy improv show. But in terms of improv on Spontaneum's sort of field, you just don't prep much at all. You might have a very basic, like, 5-point structure of a story in your head. Like, okay, this might be what I want to do. I typically don't even do that. I think, okay, this is the setting that we've rolled, and then it's a lot easier if you have a bunch of people and you can kind of have these backseat DMs and be like, okay, what's this guy's name? And then they're like, John. I'm like, okay, John's now a crucial NPC. Thank you for naming John. You just sort of lean into the fact that your decisions might be bad ones, and that's fine because you're making it up as you go.
That's awesome.
And the power, there is the ability to retcon, and that's fine. You could totally retcon. Who's going to care? It's your table. But at the same time, sometimes having these gaping plot holes in your improv games can lead to the best interactions. Like, why is it a plot hole? Maybe it's like this weird Deadpool meta situation where they're all aware they're in a game. All of the hurdles and stumbling blocks in improv or even like character death or whatever can become boosts for you to propel yourself forward into the next arc of whatever you're looking at. Being able to turn a setback in terms of a story or a character element into a character beat or a moment is the sign, in my opinion, of a great DM or player.
I think that's absolutely true. And I'm going to circle back to something you said at the beginning of all that. And that's every game will have elements of improv in them. I think that's 100% true. And this action of dialing it up to be at this point where there's absolutely or nearly no prep, to me, that's what I consider to be synonymous with a fully improvised game. But you're right. I think a lot of the things we're going to be talking about today, or the things you've already said, are going to apply to any moment in the game where the players surprise you and you as the game master have to make a decision of how to move that forward. So yeah, 100%. I would like to ask you, because just hearing that, and for me, I'm a game master who I've had to prep less and less, not by choice, but because I now have two children and they take up a lot of my time.
A lot of prep.
For the better. So a lot of prep goes towards them instead of towards my game. And I found that it's a muscle that, you know, the more I get to flex, the better I become at it. But maybe, Sam, you have some shortcuts for me and for the audience. So I'd like to, I guess my first question to you is, you know, if somebody listening has little to no experience running a game with little amounts of preparation and they want to try running a game with less preparation, what would you say to that person to give them the courage to do it and have fun while they're doing it?
I mean, that's really all there is to it, is courage and confidence. That is so big. Because when you're running a mainly improvised game, you don't have the skeleton of prep to sort of lean against. Mm-hmm. You are free-balling it out there. And I really think that as long as you are brave enough to make mistakes, that's fine. And really, as long as your group is open and communicates with you and won't mock you relentlessly for making those mistakes, or at least if they do it in a very teasing way, then you're good. Because at the end of the day, this is something that should be universal. I'm making a general statement here. I know, sue me. Tabletop role-playing games are games. They are meant to be fun, no matter how you play it, if it's for the story, if it's for the laughs, if it's for those heartfelt moments between characters. I could give less of a shit as long as you are having fun. And that is it. At the end of the day, as long as everyone is comfortable and is having fun, mm-hmm. that is all that should be the Maslow's hierarchy of tabletop needs. That is the pinnacle.
So, yeah, that's the most important piece, for sure.
Or the bottom. I totally forget how the pyramid is laid.
I don't know. I didn't English take it. Yeah. Is it philosophy?
Philosophy. No, you're right. Not English. Yeah. but yeah, in terms of not prepping, don't be afraid to ask your players for help. That is fine. You're only human. And if you're prepping something and you're like, okay, I need a name for this tavern, and you just kind of point at one of your players or even roll a dice, putting them on the spot can be stressful. So obviously talk about them beforehand if they're not into that. But putting them on the spot and putting the onus on them to create something makes them that much more engaged with the game. It's like when they're like, oh, who's sitting at the bar? And you have to improv the goblin who only wears overalls and his name is Tharg. They're going to love Tharg forever because they helped make him in the moment. And that's why he joins the party later and has a very heartfelt moment when he dies right before the final battle. It's a whole thing. It's those moments where it's, you can make a beautiful story behind the scenes. I love to do that. I'm not going to say my stories are beautiful. They're certainly stories, I hope. But you can make a story behind the scenes and hope for the best for it, but you are not going to have the level of control that you think you will when you are having that story roll out. Things are going to be beyond your control, and that is fine. As long as you accept that, I understand that the true fun of the game comes from you and the players interacting and creating a setting. That is the real sort of, that's the crux of improv or improv games, I guess, is that collaboration is huge. The yes and of anyone's thing. I say for Spontaneum in the green room, I'm like, you are all backseat DMs, more or less. If I introduce a character or a thing, like say there's the king of this castle, and I'm like, yeah, he's the king of Cheeseland, and he's a real bigwig, and he's super powerful. And one of you decide to say, actually, I'm the long-lost king's bastard son, and I am heir apparent to the throne. I'm like, yeah, maybe, roll a D100, we'll see. Like, the yes and is the most powerful tool in a DM's toolbox, besides no. I mean, if a player wants to do something completely game-breaking, or that doesn't make any sense, you could say no. That's fine. As long as you are openly communicating about that kind of stuff, it's at the end of the day, you do have the final say. You could say no, but yes and is much more powerful in creating these sort of dynamics and relationships at the table.
I think you're onto something really interesting there that I hadn't actually really thought about before. And that's, in an improvised game, the beauty of one of the resulting beauties of it is that you get to collaboratively create something with no preconceived notion of where it's going to go. That's really, really cool. Mm-hmm. But this idea of having these backseat game masters, or having the players be primed to expect a different experience, I think is crucial and very important. Because if I were to go and run a game in my ongoing campaign in a new setting that I don't know anything about, with NPCs that I have to improvise fully and new story arcs and everything, and I didn't warn my players ahead of time and expect them to treat the game the exact same way they would have treated a game where, you know, they were being spectators watching a train go on a track, that's a whole, and I'm not saying that's bad, but what I'm saying is that's a whole different experience. So yeah. I love this, that the players, there's maybe a shift in the role that the players need to take, or at least that's what I'm hearing. Is that sound right?
Yeah. Essentially, the more improv you get, it is better to give more responsibility to the players. That there's a sort of, it's an inverse sort of relationship between improvisation and player power, for the most part. Or I guess that's a direct correlation. But also, fun little tip, when you give the players more power, you have to do less work. It's magical.
So you're telling me the secret of improvised games is just let the players do everything?
Yes. But to have not only does it's like a win-win-win. If you sort of have the courage to let go for a moment, your game will turn out better. At least for me, it always has. Maybe it's just that I have crippling imposter syndrome, which I do. Your game will always benefit from it. Because even if they introduce somebody that's like, that is the exact opposite of how I thought this was going to go, then you have to think on your feet. And you have to come up with a new story plot that drives the thing forward. And then they're like, oh, okay, thanks for the session. Then you're like, okay, now I need to think. How do I get from this completely different branch to the story I thought I was going to get? Maybe you get back there. Maybe you don't. It's fine. Because the players will always do the heavy lifting for you.
That's great. I think that's really cool. It almost reminds me of playing a game of Fiasco. No, you know, going back to this idea that the players can do heavy lifting and they can bring forward elements to the game that perhaps blur the line between what's the game master's responsibility and what a player's responsibility is. And I think that's really neat. And I'd like to encourage people listening to give it a try. It might be out of people's comfort zone. I know that it might be out of, you know, had someone told me to do that 4 or 5 years ago, I might have been like, I don't know. But yeah, of course, asking players questions about the world, even in a prepared game, can be fun because they give you neat answers and you can kind of roll with those punches. Yeah. It does make me think, though, Sam, that the kind of preamble to the game, or the session zero to a game like that, might have a few different bullet points in the drop-down menu. So I'd like to ask you, what kind of conversations do you have with people for Spontaneum or for any kind of improvised game that you run?
For Spontaneum specifically, I like to run pretty quick because, you know, we have a green room. We got a schedule.
Yeah, gotta get going. Yeah.
But typically, I just say, listen, this is what I don't allow at my table. If there's anything that I missed or anything that makes you uncomfortable, please tell me now. And additionally, if I mess up on stream, do not feel afraid to call me out. X card, whatever, it can be on stream, you can text me about it. As long as you tell me, I mean, I might be embarrassed, but do not care about that. I would much rather you be comfortable and we wind back the clock a little bit. Because in this improvisational setting, you might say something out of pocket. You might introduce spiders when someone said they were arachnophobic. You can forget. That happens. You can make mistakes. Yeah. Own up to
especially that. when the pressure's on, right? You're improvising, you're in a scene, something comes and I know for me the first thing that pops into my head is often the first thing that comes out of my mouth. So
yeah.
Usually those things don't upset people because I like to consider myself to be a thoughtful person. But yeah, sometimes in the heat of the moment, you talk about spiders or you talk about maybe gore or, you know, something that isn't necessarily something that you're used to excluding in a game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And you want to make everybody have fun. And if everyone's safe and feels safe, they're going to be their best improvised self, right?
Yeah.
At the table.
Yeah, exactly. You want to chip away at those layers, you know? And if people are comfortable enough to call you out on a mistake, then they're comfortable enough to do some really good improv. And that's the space I'd like to have, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, if you mess up, say sorry. And if you're in a good group that's understanding of the fact that you have a ton of pressure on you, they'll be like, yeah, it's fine. Just don't do it again. And you'll be like, yeah, I won't.
Yeah.
Or I'll try not to. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, talking about a little while ago, you mentioned the yes and improv rule.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to dig through a few of the others and see, you know, get your take on how those kind of fit into an improvised tabletop RPG game. Because I think, you know, these rules for improv comedy, I don't think they fully translate to the tabletop RPG space. We might need to tweak them a little bit for them to make sense. The yes and one, I agree with you. It makes a whole lot of sense, especially in the space where, like you said, players are involved in the creation as much as you as the game master. Let's move on to maybe some of the others. So one that stood out to me is to not ask questions, but make statements. And you know, in the context of improv comedy, asking a question puts a lot of pressure on the other person to create an interesting and engaging answer.
Right.
How do you feel that works out in the tabletop RPG space? Should game masters ask questions to their players or not? And how does that kind of affect things?
It's different. I mean, typically the example I've heard used for don't ask questions, make statements, it's like, you enter the scene and immediately describe what you are doing. You know, it's very much tell, don't show for that one instance because you can't become the character that you're describing because, you know, it's an improv thing. You won't be prepared for it. So, like, I would have to say, golly, gosh, darn, it sure sucks being a fish with no digestive system. And then you're taken into that world. It's weird, it's absurd, but you're there immediately because you made a statement about it. For tabletop, the DM makes a lot of statements simply because they have to describe what is around people that is not physical. They have to bring the abstract into the concrete. DMs should, I mean, players always have to ask questions, of course, because they are trying to see the unseen. And that is where the DM comes in. But when the DM asks the players a question, it could be a bit of a curveball depending on what group you're in. But it can range from anything from, like, how does that make your character feel? How are they feeling in this moment? To, what do you think this guy should be named? Or, what's the history of this bridge, do you think? And then you can yes and, or yes but, or no but. Really, at the end of the day, you're sort of using your players as this, like, think tank, I guess.
Yeah.
To sort of generate the ideas, because you're doing 900 other things, it's fine. And I guarantee you, if you're with a group you like and you talk about it beforehand and they're down for it, it's a ton of fun. Trust me. Plus, then it gets them into the DMing spirit and then they'll do it and then you can be a player for a while. So, I mean, just saying.
Benefits, added benefits for sure.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you should always, I think that rule doesn't directly translate as well, because everyone should ask questions. Mm-hmm. I think a Socratic version of playing tabletop role-playing games is important, especially in an improv setting.
I like that. I agree with you. I think if anything, asking questions in a context where maybe you wouldn't normally ask questions, like you're saying, naming an NPC, explaining where a character comes from or what they're wearing, or you know, any of these elements that help add immersion, asking them, pitching them over to the players is a fun way to get them involved in improvising the creation of the space. I 100% agree. I think where this might shine the best is in like a role play scene, like a social encounter, where yes. So long as everybody's on the same page, you could effectively do an improv skit within a tabletop role-playing game, mm-hmm. where, you know, the players are at a dinner party and they might say something like, oh, that portrait of your son is fantastic, even though you didn't see that in the first place. Now you have this whole cool, like, oh, now the character has a son.
That is, let's that go is with that. So big, actually, that you brought that up. Having characters will things into, or having players will things into existence that are small, like little details, that is so helpful. That is huge, because one, it gives them something to latch on to. And two, it removes the onus from you to create the unseen, because they are seeing it themselves. And it is that much more genuine to them, because they visualized it and have sort of, like, obviously, there's a limit to this. They can't be like, oh, look, the BBEG, his boxers are down. He's going to trip. Oh, no, what a goofy fiasco. There's obviously limits to it. And you can always say, like, no, that's not the way it is.
Yeah, not the net.
but having them flesh out details and saying, like, upright, I do love to do this, is like, listen, you can, if you think there's, like, a detail for, like, a scene or something that you want to just manifest, go for it. The worst I can say is no.
Love it. Love it. All right. Let's move on to another improv rule. I think this is kind of fun, actually. The next one is to play in the present. So to try not to look back, but to look forward. Mm. How do you feel like that translates into a tabletop RPG space?
That can be difficult. I think because a lot of these games with improv, you don't, it's a bunch of improvs one shots. That's all it is. Yeah. But for a campaign, it can be difficult because those are founded on precedent and what the character does over this course of these serialized sessions. You can't really ignore the past when you are creating these fully fleshed out characters. Versus an improv, you might create a character that is one dimensional. That's fine because it's funny, you know?
And the scene lasts for 2 minutes or whatever, and then
exactly. Uh-huh. With Spontaneum, we do lean into that a bit. We tend not to focus on precedent, and like we retcon stuff if we think it'd be funnier to retcon it, and that's fine because it's a very goofy setting. But if you're trying to do it more seriously, especially for tabletop games, when you are focusing on character development and whatnot or whatever, the past is so important to what motivates these characters that you can't really ignore it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, no, I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think you're onto something too, right? The past is foundational for the character's growth, is what you said. And I think, right? Is that what you said?
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So like, I really like how you spun that, because sure, we're looking back, but we're doing it so we can look forward. Yeah. And I think that is something that shouldn't be forgotten, right? If all you're doing is looking back and the character is sad about an NPC who died in the last combat, or this, you know, this an NPC who died in a session prior, just that is awesome roleplay and hats off. But if you can also tack on the, what's my character going to do about these feelings? Are they going to promise to return and bring flowers to this character's grave on the anniversary of the character's death? Are they going to, you know, go spread the news to their family? Like, by pushing it forward, you kind of seed future actions for your character, which I think are super cool. that your game master can then take and roll with. So yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
You have no choice but to look back a little bit. I agree with you, Sam.
Yeah. And if you're playing a campaign, you're playing with a fully realized person. And that person has mannerisms that have been defined by their upbringing and whatnot. And to bring them into a scene, you're not just bringing this character in the moment. You're bringing everything that they carry along with them as well. In improv, you have the luxury of not needing to do that necessarily. Like in Spontaneum, it doesn't matter because we're not necessarily there for a story. We're there to have a lot of fun and to crack heads. But for a campaign, it's different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I really like that you made that distinction between one-shots and ongoing games. And maybe we'll come back to that because I think that that's an interesting point. But let's do one more of these improv rules before we move on. And this one is about change, move, and more change. And I think what this translates to is, you know, make bombastic decisions and like move on and just keep moving on and make decisions and don't kind of fret on, you know, indifference is the death of comedy or what have you. So how do you feel like that translates into the tabletop RPG space?
That could be difficult. For a one shot, again, steamrolling through that stuff can be very useful because you're only there for 3 hours or what have you, however long your sessions are. For a campaign, you don't have that luxury because you will have to deal with the consequences of your own actions eventually. It's much more difficult to sort of put that off and to steamroll forward when consequence is such a huge part of tabletop role-playing games. So when, like, you can keep moving forward, but not addressing something can be such a waste of a potential moment. It's like a box you're leaving closed because you're scared to see what's inside, even though the pros outweigh the cons or something like that. Bad analogy, but
I get what you're saying. Yeah. And I think to a certain degree, it still speaks to the heart of what this rule in improv, I think, is trying to say is that, like, make decisions, make decisions. I think in like you're saying, a three minute improv skit. Yeah. You're going to want to move on and pass down to the next thing quickly. But if we take this on a 15 session game campaign, then yeah, you know what? You can simmer in your decision. You can simmer in the consequences of your decision too. I think there's a lot to be said about that. I would, for the sake of conversation, I would say though that you don't want to open all of the boxes. I think your character, just like anybody, will have things that they care more about and things that they're indifferent about. And
oh, sure,
right?
No, and, I totally agree. You have to be very selective with that sort of process. But in terms of, it's really more of a pacing issue almost, because in one shot you want constant action just because you're only there for a certain amount of time. You don't have enough time to really simmer a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Especially in improv, you can just keep rapid firing this stuff and it doesn't matter. you're just trying to go for the gut here. But for campaigns, again, you really do get a simmer in that, and you get to be a lot more selective with the boxes you open. And I guess you're right. In order to phrase it more correctly, you have to be selective of what you pick as opposed to just bowling over all of them. You can go back and be like, okay, my character's not really over this trauma of watching this entire village get slaughtered. How are they processing that? Or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Look, it's looking back to the past, which is something you can't really avoid in a long-term setting. Short-term, go crazy. Go for it. Go for the gullet, man. But long term, it's much more difficult. It's a different game, really. Than I think one shots and campaigns are such different beasts that it's almost difficult to sort of group them in under the same umbrella.
Yeah, you're really right. They are so different as far as the narrative that's being told, the story that you're spinning with the people around the table. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. They are so different. I wonder if it's worth talking about some of those differences. Like what in your experience, I mean, I think some of the obvious ones are there, right? It's a one shot. It's going to be 3 hours, one and done. And then you could potentially never have to deal with any of the consequences again. Outside of that, are there other things that you find are different about a one shot when compared to an ongoing game?
Let me put it this way. I think a one shot is like the movie 2012. The disaster film, mm-hmm. where everything goes to shit. And then at the end, oh, hooray, they're safe. What are they going to do next? What would possibly follow up the destruction of the planet? Like, the rebuilding process would be immense. It'd be for a whole... You'd have a whole different movie that would be a sequel if you were to make one. That's a one-shot. You were doing reckless stuff. You do not have to care about what comes next. It's like any apocalypse movie is like that for the most part. Campaigns are more like The Walking Dead, where they have to deal with the process of understanding, like, oh, wait, the zombies aren't the bad guys. People are evil. And coming to those realizations and in this very, very long-term stretch of, okay, what do we do now? Because there's that fear of the future and the fear of what comes next that can really motivate a campaign that can't as much for one shot. Unless you want to head on a cliffhanger. If you want to do that, be like, but we could turn this into a campaign, or we could turn this into a little two-shot, three-shot, four-shot. That's up to you. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the responsibility that comes in a fully planned campaign doesn't need to be there in a one-shot. You, or at least in my opinion.
You're 100% right. I wonder... How does that affect the way you improvise, right? Like, because in a one shot, you can be bombastic, I guess. Maybe what I'm trying to get at is, how do you find the right time to do the bombastic things in a long form campaign? Because in a one shot, yeah, your mistakes. And I mean, I really like the way you said it. Have confidence. And if you make mistakes, it doesn't matter. And I think that applies in all contexts. But in a one shot, you can just keep shooting your shot over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Whereas in an ongoing game, you know, you could retcon it, I suppose. But if you have like a lukewarm improvised shot that you don't really want to retcon, but the players kind of buy into it and then they start doing their thing and you're like, that could have been better.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? When do you do those big like 1-2 punch things?
Typically, when it comes to campaigns, I do like to prep much more than I do for one shots. Sometimes for one shots, I won't even prep anything, even if it's not for spontaneum. Sometimes I'll just be like, I'll show up with a blank word doc, and I'm like, all right, you guys are in Coolsburg. And then we go from there. For a campaign, though, I'm an author at heart. I love starting, or at least thinking about what I want. Or at least what I want, something that starts as a campaign. If it's something that starts as a one shot, it's a bit trickier. But something that starts as a campaign, thinking about those big moments beforehand, like a big battle scene that I would like to happen, or how I want it to end, and sort of work backwards. That's typically how I think about my bombastic moments. Sometimes, if the players do something really dumb, and I mean really, really stupid, then you go for the gut, and you're like, okay, are you sure?
Yeah, I can roll with this. Let's do
perfect.
It.
Perfect. Let's go. Then it's on them, you know, because then they're involved because they made the stupid decision that resulted in them awakening the Tarrasque.
Mm-hmm.
That was all their decision. And it makes for a much more fun game because you're like, all right, if you insist. And I think that plays in a lot more for campaigns because that's definitely happened in campaigns I've both run and Benin, and honestly, those are some of my favorite moments where the party does a bit of an oopsie boo-boo and they have to really scramble to fix it because they made a mistake. You know, it was the autonomy was entirely on them. That, I think, is when a big 1-2 punch is the most effective.
I really like that. And especially like you're saying, it was their decision that caused this thing to happen. So they usually feel a lot of ownership in that. There's something going on in my home game right now. And it was really, I could see the seed of doubt in one of my players where there was a quest to go to fight a big bad. And she goes, you know, this doesn't really, like, I don't think my character cares about this. let's move on to something else. And she was trying to convince the rest of the table to move on. And she almost had them. And and I was like, okay, that's great, guys. But you do know you have to circle back this way. Like, this town is a critical interlocking piece of the continent. I certainly hope that whatever you let loose doesn't take control of this space. And they were like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like to think that 80% of DMing is phrasing. Very careful, threatening phrasing. It's like, yeah, you can do that. You can do that. Should
just
you?
Be ready.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Should you? I don't know. I'm not God. You can figure out what happens next.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I'm feeling like some stats, Sam. So I'm going to pull up the poll that I ran yesterday. Yes. And the poll, it basically asked the Twitterverse if people have improvised games before, like fully improvised a game, and if they have, if they liked it, or if it, you know, wasn't their cup of tea. And there were four options. The first option was no, but I'd like to try. That got 4% of the vote.
Whoa.
Yeah. No, but it's not for me. That got 6% of the vote. And then the other two were yes, but I didn't like it, and yes, I loved it.
Okay.
75% of people said that they had run an fully improvised game and loved it. Which, you know what? Like, that's really cool. I didn't think that such an overwhelming majority of people would say that they first had tried improvising a game in its entirety, because it took me a long time to get to a place where I wanted to try that, and that they loved it. That's the thing that, like,
that's
impressive. Good on you guys, Twitter. And this was a large sample of people. I think it had something like 600 votes in the span of a day. So, like, you know, like, it's not huge, but it's still.
That's a reasonable sample size. That's above the like the 30 that you need to make N a reasonable statistical value.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I think as sort of a message to people who would like to try, understand that you are not running a D&D campaign, or really even a D&D game. You are running a moment, and making that moment as enjoyable and and making the players feel as present in that singular moment as possible is your goal. And that is totally fine. You can mess up. You can retcon. As long as people are having fun in that moment and are aware of the present, you are doing your job perfectly.
That is some deep stuff there, Sam. That is awesome. I can really appreciate that. That's fantastic advice. Yeah, I don't even know. I'm speechless. I'm at a loss for words at how you're running a moment. Exactly. Don't worry about the before and the after. Just have a good time and make it happen. I think that's super cool. You know, given the high volume of people who did say they'd run a game, you know, if you add up the yes, loved it, and yes, not for me.
Like, we're 500 people or something, right?
Yeah, we're at 90% of the vote. So I'm thinking maybe, like, if you have tools that could be valuable for these people who've run, you know, maybe they've run a one-shot, or not a one-shot, they've run an improvised game before, and they're looking to get better at it. Mm-hmm. What kind of, you know, tools, websites, you name it, things that maybe we can cheat and, like, have a little bit of prep, like tiny little things of prep that you might do to make it better.
To make stuff better, one thing that I would highly recommend, really any TTRPG player, is it's tvtropes.com. Understanding how stories work is so big for when you want to, like, create them. Especially, like, I mean, obviously there's, like, like the classic twist villain. That's so easy to do in improv. Because, like, you can be like, okay, yeah, I left enough breadcrumbs there unintentionally. I guess that works. Really, improv is all, yeah, I guess that works. It's fine. It's totally okay. In terms of naming characters on the go, that is something I hear people constantly complain about. A trick that I learned is finding two items that are nearby you and just smashing them together. You see a lock, you see a door. Oh yeah, that's Rock Door the Orc. Or just even switching up the first letters of stuff. Like, oh yeah, that's Bystattery, the gnomish tinkerer. Or just go with normal names like John. That's fine. Nobody's gonna care. Really, for names, you just have to be on the moment. Mm-hmm. Hey, but if a player suggests something better, like, oh, what if the gnome is called, and then insert funny pun here, and you're like, oh, that's better, we're doing that. That's fine. Take suggestions from your player. That's huge. That is the yes and. Again, that's the most useful tool in your toolbox besides no. Additionally, stuff you can possibly prep for. Have something to write notes down. As an improv DM, keeping notes is huge. It does make it a little more difficult, but writing down stuff that happens, if you have the capacity for it, is super helpful. Coming up with combat can be a little complicated in improv games if you're making a custom monster on the go. If that is the case, either go to the bathroom or something, or call like a 10-minute break, like, I need to flush out this stat sheet real quick, hold on. That's fine. Ask for breaks. Ask for moments to think. That's okay. Just give yourself the time you need to make it enjoyable for people. And have them understand that, you know, it's not going to be perfect. And that's fine, because it never was going to be perfect.
I like all of that advice. I think it's all fantastic. I love the name one, too. I've never done that, taking some like two things and smushing them together. That's going to happen next Sunday, for sure.
Fantastic.
But I also, one thing that I often do now is I think of somebody that I know, mm-hmm. that my players maybe don't know. And that inspires me for the name of this character. And it also inspires me because I create like a caricature of that person. So it's like, you know what? I'm picking, I don't know, my coworker who is always on the ball, always prepares everything. They've got like the beautiful PowerPoints for every meeting. They're that, you know, hypothetically that person's name is, well, you know, Francine is now the overachieving wizard who's like running the magic shop and has everything ready all the time. You know, like, so it really helps me create a character with a name.
That's a great
Yeah. One other thing too, and this is for the planners out there who, like me, are forced to improvise. And I say that as if it's a bad thing, but if you're forced to, your DM screen is your friend.
Yes.
Put things on there, change those things so that they're always relevant. And you know, if there's ever something that you're scrambling to do, that's something you're going to want to put on your Game Master screen for next time you run a game, because that's the stuff that you need to have on hand. One that surprised me actually was the Schools of Magic. I don't run a whole lot of D&D, so when I do and a wizard casts Detect Magic, they're always like, what school of magic is it? And I'm like, oh my god, I only remember three of them.
Let me check.
Yeah, exactly. So now it's plastered in my Game Master screen with like just examples of what it might, you know, like a thing that would be that school that would be interesting for them to find. Things like this.
I also think that sort of plays into, if you don't know a rule or something, just look it up. It's fine. And that gives your players time to take a small break, look up their phone, whatever. That's okay. You don't have to know all the rules to run Dungeons & Dragons or any tabletop role-playing game for that matter. As long as people are having fun, especially in an improv setting, as long as people are having fun, then you're okay.
One thing too that I'll borrow from Dungeon World that I think everybody listening should try is, in Dungeon World there's a mechanic called fronts. And so what you do is you create your bad, and it doesn't have to be a person. It can be like, winter is getting colder and colder and colder, and the next winter is going to be worse, or whatever. Or yeah, there's a portal and it's slowly opening, and who knows what's going to happen when it fully opens. And what a front is you create the threat, and then you create kind of like a natural progression of that threat over time if it's unaddressed.
Oh.
And so it's just like five bullets, you give yourself, I don't know, like a time frame that's relevant to the game that you're playing and the pace that it's going to be. And then you've got your like three or four things that your player characters are going to be confronted with, and they have to make choices to address one and not another. And then, oh, that one's getting worse. Next time we play, I already know kind of, sort of, you know, what to lean on.
So, I really like that for prep games. I had never heard of that before. I think I'm actually going to do that for my Friday game. that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's really neat. And you kind of keep a running tally, you know, of, oh, they didn't. That's the third week in a row that they didn't go after the portal. Stuff's coming out of it now. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great way to track urgency. I like that. I like that a lot. Coming up with that on an improv scale might be a little difficult, but I think even just writing down the threats and just having them in a place where you can see them is a great idea. Even if it's just like clips and phrases like evil baby. You know what evil baby means. If somebody else looks at your thing, they might not know, but I mean, it's for you. If they're your notes. And you're like, oh, they haven't looked at evil baby in a minute. What's he doing? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion, I think, for really campaigns or one-shots.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, check it out, Dungeon World. For people looking for another fantasy-style tabletop role-playing game that isn't from a wizard on a coast, you can check that one out, Dungeon World. It's powered by the apocalypse, so anybody who's familiar with it's great.
I'll have to check that out then.
Really, really cool. Yeah, do it. All right, cool. Sam, I'm looking at the clock, and I think we're about at our dedicated time to talk about improv.
Alrighty.
Before we, you know, do a conclusion and a wrap up and all that, I want to give you one last chance to talk about improv and role-playing games. This is your anything you didn't get a chance to say, or anything you want to revisit, the microphone is all yours.
Yeah. I think that improv is an unavoidable monster guarding the mouth of every single tabletop role-playing game. And you can choose to answer that Sphinx's riddle with some bullshit that you come off with the top of the head, and it's going to say, hell yeah, please continue. And it's okay. Sometimes you want to fight the monster, too. And that might be futile, or it might help. I can't say. I'm not the Sphinx. But you sort of got to figure it out as you go along. And flying by the seat of your pants and understanding that they're not exactly very aerodynamic is all a part of the game. And you just got to reach terminal velocity using your pants as a parachute.
I love it. And, you know, I think, and I can attest to this, the more you do it, the better you find yourself getting. And it's not about being good or bad, but, you know, I find it to be more and more fun. Mm-hmm. And I tend to stress less the more I do it. And to me, that means I'm doing a better job. You find, you know, your mileage may vary, and people listening find your fun wherever you find it. But absolutely, I think you learn to live with those mistakes in a more creative way, maybe, is...
Flip them on their heads.
Exactly. Well, Sam, I think that brings us to the end of our conversation about improv. So, Sam, thanks again. Before we shut down the show, please remind us where people can buy your compendium of
shitty ideas.
Bad, shitty ideas, which I'm sure they're all not shitty ideas, but or your shows, Spontaneum, all that great stuff.
Yeah, so you can find the Shitty Not Compendium on DriveThruRPG. Additionally, Spontaneum is on Twitch at Spontaneum Show. You are probably going to find me most active on my Twitter. That's at R Roleplaying. That's RROLL Playing. It's a little play on words. Haha, funny. I run the Etherlog. That is a long-form D&D podcast, which is sort of like Studio Ghibli meets Arcane in terms of tone and setting.
That's a nice mashup.
Oh, it's
right
a
there.
Lot of fun. And you can find that wherever podcasts are available for the most part, even YouTube. Additionally, I write for Couch Soup, so if you want articles on Dungeons & Dragons and or Colin Stetson, the experimental saxophonist, those are my only two articles out right now, but I'm writing more. And I'm currently writing a fantasy book, so we'll see where that is by the time this comes out, but who knows?
Yeah, that's exciting. Yeah. Exciting. Well, I hope that goes well. And if it takes a little longer to come out and got to spend some time in the oven, that's fine. You know, we can always find a way to get the listeners of Role Play Chat to know when it comes out. So yeah, thanks, Sam. I would highly encourage everybody listening to go take a look at the very least to Spontaneum, because I think that's super relevant to today's conversation. Yes. Go see the master at hand.
Okay.
and definitely go check out all of the other work. I know Etherlog has a stacked cast.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all kinds of great folks on there. So yeah, absolutely. 100% recommend all of Sam's stuff. It'll all be linked down. I always say down below as if I'm on YouTube.
Yeah.
Every single time. They're going to be linked in the show notes. Mm. So please go find, you know, go find all that stuff, all those goodies down there. Thanks so much, Sam. If folks wanted to find me, you can always reach out on Twitter at role_play_chat. If you don't want to be confined to a character limit, you could reach out to me on a good old-fashioned email. That's contact@roleplaychat@gmail.com. Thanks very much, Sam, for being here. It was a blast.
Thank you. I've had so much fun.
Yeah. Cheers, man. Let's call it a chat.
Alrighty.